Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Coffee Break. I'm Spencer Campbell, aka Gila RPGs. I'm so excited to be here. For those of you who aren't familiar, Coffee Break is just a weekly show where I hang out with cool people and friends in the indie RPG scene, and we just chat for an hour about whatever is on our minds. And I'm really, really excited that I have Aaron Voigt here. Aaron is one of my, I'm going to just say it right at the start, one of my favorite reviewers of RPGs out there. So very excited to be talking with Aaron. Aaron, welcome. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Spencer. This is it's a pleasure.
I'm so excited to have you here. I kind of alluded to a little bit about like what you do, or at least one thing that you do. Can you, would you mind telling folks at home what it is you are or what it is you do and all that good stuff?
I call myself an enthusiast because I feel like reviewer or critic is definitely too pretentious. I don't want to do that, but I run a small YouTube channel and I try to say nice things about indie games largely. That's it.
I love that. I love the reframing of it as enthusiast, because that's how I typically kind of like talk about games, is mostly just on like the, hey, this is cool and these are the things that I like about it. Unless right. It's like the Dragon game, in which case I feel like I'm completely allowed to say whatever negative
Listen,
things.
Listen, yeah, that's punching up. That's completely, everything's on the table.
Right. So, oh good, Cassie is here. It also goes by enthusiast. So it seems like we're in good company. It seems like a good marker for that sort of stuff. Yeah, heck yeah. I'm so excited to have you here. I forgot to ask you pre-show, so I'm going to ask you now. Do you have any kind of like coffee or drink on you? I always like to see if folks have something fun on them.
Yeah, no, I prepared. So I have like an apple cider tea that I have Ooh. In my Shaman King mug that was given to me by my friend Layla. So that's what I'm drinking today.
Nice. Very nice. I've just got some regular old decaf tonight. I've had enough fuel in me today, so I thought about making proper coffee, and then I reined it in. So I've got it. I have it in my very cute island that I got on, or mug that I got on Jeju Island, which is an island off the coast of Korea. Went there with Aww. My wife, with her family. There's this very cute otter on it that has an orange in its hand, because the island is known for its oranges. But on Aww. The other side is just, it just says, life is a journey.
So true.
And you're like, you know what, little otter friend, you're right, life is a journey, and I'm excited to go on it with you with this coffee mug.
That's a wise otter, I don't have to tell you.
Wise beyond its years. I love it. Absolutely love it. Excellent. All right, well, I mean, for those of you who have seen this show before, you know that we kind of just kind of talk about whatever is exciting or on our minds or what we're thinking about this week. So I'm going to actually just start off with that, which is there anything that you've been kind of like reading or doing or thinking about this week that's kind of got your mind, like it's consuming your mind this week?
Reading, doing, thinking about. Reading, I'm listening to an audiobook of... I'm going to pull it up, but basically it's about C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and how their experiences of the First World War affected their writing. It's called A Hobbit, A Wardrobe, and A Great War by Joseph LeConte. You know, I have complicated emotions about those two authors, but like...
Sure.
you know, it's an interesting intake into their writing. So that's one thing. And then, you know, just trying to figure out what angle I want to make my next video on. Those are the things I've been kind of thinking about.
That book sounds fascinating. Sounds really cool. Get some great folks in chat, which is always good to see. Hey, Josh. Hey, Cassie. Hey, you. Good to see you all. I actually got real life coffee with Josh yesterday, which was a delight to have an in-person coffee break. What an idea. What an idea to actually like see somebody in the flesh like that. It was pretty cool.
No way.
I know, right? So you mentioned like your next video, and that's kind of what I wanted to kind of talk to you about. This sort of stuff is, you know, that's how I got to know you, is through the reviews that you did. And I know I was very thankful that you've done a review for one of my games, which is very cool. And so I was curious, how did you get into the idea of like doing the sort of a game, maybe again, not game critique, but like game overviews or game enthusiasm videos or whatever you want to call them?
Right. So, I'm actually way, way new to the indie scene. I've only really been quote unquote in it since like 2021. Largely played Dungeons and Dragons up until like 2020. Although I did read Interstitial because I'm a Kingdom Hearts fan. That was like my first real like non D&D RPG, but got into the scene about 2021, started meeting everybody. And my friend Nick, who I'm gonna try to plug here, was asking for reviews for one of his games, Goof Troop. And that's Nick, Kid Nick One on Twitter. He's got a bunch of interesting and weird games. It's also kidnick.itch.io. But he was like, hey, can you get it? We were doing the I was one of the Caltrop Core jams, and he was like, hey, I'll trade a review for someone. I was like, oh yeah, I'll read. Or it's called Garsh Quest. I called it Goof Troop, but it's based on, I don't know if you've ever seen this. It is the wildest like Disney short I've ever seen in my life, but it's basically like in the older style of Disney shorts where like Mickey and Minnie are on a date and Goofy keeps like interrupting their date.
Not seen
And then
this.
it is bizarre. And I won't spoil how it ends, but it is just the most batshit thing I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
Long story short, I reviewed Garsh Quest, and it was fun. It was like the first time I ever tried to think about an RPG critically and understand what its mechanics are like or in doing. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And at the same time, I don't know if you know who Cameron Kunzelman is, but he's one of the game writers, game critic. He writes for Ranged Touch. But he had like posted something that was like, if you want to get really good at your field, you should probably like read an article every day. And I was like, oh, I want to know about RPGs. I should probably try to read an RPG, like maybe not every day, but every week. And between those two things, I was like, oh, I should start reading RPGs. And actually, Slayers was like one of the first ones I tried to like read all the way through. And I was like, well, this game rules, firstly.
That's so
So,
good.
That was great. But from there, I was like, well, this is kind of a way for me to understand RPGs better and be a better, designer, be more informed about what's going on in the scene since I don't really know a whole lot about it. And two, I don't know if you know this, Spencer, but there are so many of us in the scene that are just like dying for anybody to take a look at our work.
That sounds about right. That sounds vaguely real.
I'm sure you're maybe a little bit familiar with that. But I was like, this is kind of a nice way to pick like, relatively smaller, designers and be like, hey, look, here's a record of what this game is trying to do. And maybe there's some stuff that doesn't work for me overall, but like here's what the heart and soul of it is, what they're trying to get at. And really just trying to show, that there is so much stuff beyond 5e. As I've kind of worked into my practice, I've really been trying to emulate Jacob Geller, the YouTuber's style, which is like, trying to get at more of an emotional core rather than just like mechanical. Not to say that those aren't related, but I'm trying to do more touchy-feely stuff that I feel will speak to people, and try to get people to do, to take a closer look and ideally, start playing more weird niche games.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. I love that the idea of making it about getting eyes on games or getting, ears listening about
Right.
games, about, that aren't necessarily gonna catch somebody's eye because they're from a newer designer or something like, or the people that are watching this video just haven't even thought about looking beyond the bubble of whatever game space that they engage with. And now suddenly they watch one video and they might have that moment where they go, oh shit, there's like a lot of other stuff out there actually, which is really super cool. And then it goes the other way where you then realize how much is out there, and then you realize there's a lot out there. And then
There's
figuring out,
so much.
because when you were saying like read an when you first said read an article every day, I was like, there's no way he reads a fucking RPG every
No,
day.
absolutely not. I barely read an RPG every 2 weeks.
Yeah, but like you'd have to read one every day to try and keep up at this point with just all the incredible stuff that's coming out there. So you've been doing the videos for a little while. I absolutely love this approach that you use with them. I think you're the exactly like you said, like that idea of like the emotional connection with it, or sort of an emotional response to it, is just so fascinating. And it's very different than like a lot of, I watch a lot of board game reviews, and right. a lot of them will mostly focus on like why this game works or doesn't work from like a mechanical standpoint, which mm-hmm. is helpful. Like what kind of made you want to move in that direction? Like, as opposed to like, hey, here's a rundown of what I think works or doesn't work, more so like, yeah. hey, this is like the vibe that is coming up from this.
A couple things, you know, first I did start doing more of like a mechanics based thing, but it does, you know, at first, you know, the fact of the matter is I do find some of that a little bit boring. Like, there's only so many times you can be like, you know, the mechanics here's all the stats. And I do like maintain a statistical spreadsheet just to kind of throw that in, but it's like, you know, there's only so many ways you can say like this combat system is trying to do this thing. And like, I especially, you know, I think the turning point actually for me was like when I started reading Mouse Ritter, because I was like, this is like an OSR game. There's really not a whole lot for me to talk about mechanically here, you know, not to, you know, paint all OSR games with a broad brush, but they all kind of have that same ethos, which is like, you know, players trying to kind of solve puzzles, and like, you know, it's very dangerous mm-hmm. if you, you know, get into a fight. And I was like, the first time I read Mouse Ritter, I was like, okay, this is cute and I like it, but there's not a whole lot here, you know, for me to talk about for a video. But then I watched The Secret of NIMH, and then I read the Brian Jakes Redwall book, and I was like, oh, Mouse Ritter is like a little bit of a horror game. It is a little bit about you being really small, and, you know, when you were a little mouse, like, you know, I have two cats, like it would be a nightmare for a little mouse to live in my house, because there'd be two, you know, killing machines just kind of wandering around at all times. And like, I think that is a much more interesting way to look at games, at least for me. You know, obviously there's definitely an important, you know, aspect to looking at mechanical stuff, but like, I think it's so much more fun to like say Mouse Ritter is a story about like little night mice trying to fight against, you know, dragon cats and owls and stuff. And, you know, I find that it is a lot more, I can write a lot more easy than just being like, you know, here's the setting, here's the base mechanics. And, you know, it doesn't happen every time, you know, sometimes I'm just like, I can't get an angle on this. But I really am trying to focus more on to like, what do I think this game is going to make you feel? Because ultimately I feel like that's what's going to, you know, get people more interested in games.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's, a kind of a cool origin story with Mouse Ritter like that. And speaking of Mouse Ritter, Cassie mentioned in chat that Monkey Paw Games apparently has a terrifying dungeon crawl for Mouse Ritter, which I feel like I want to go check out after this. You know, the other thing that you and I were talking about just before we went live here is how I put virtually no effort into any video or stream that I do. My wife and other people that are in my circles wonder, like, don't you want to do, like, editing or, like, any kind of prep? And I'm like, no, I just turn the camera on and I just talk. And that's just, that's the teacher in me that just knows that once I start talking, it will work. I'll eventually get to the point mm-hmm. I want. But right. So I'm curious, because your videos are so nice. They're really, really well made. How much, like, time goes into making one of your review videos?
It's, you know, more than I would like is the honest answer. Is, you know, it takes me, you know, about, depending on how long the book is, 1 to 2 hours to read it, another, you know, 1 to 2 hours to write, between, you know, 1200 and 1800 words, you know, and then just like a terrible amount of time editing. It is my least favorite part of the whole process. I have to, you know, there's a whole bit where I have to like go find pictures and rip clips off of YouTube. And I like, whenever I see your RPG in 5 minute videos, I'm just like, God, I wish I could do that. I want to be Spencer so bad so I can just talk about games and not have to spend a long, long time writing, like doing all this, like, you know, kitschy, like putting all the fighting my software to get it right. And, you know, that's not to say I'm not happy with the stuff I like. I like that I do a scripted thing. I know that I am not an extemporaneous speaker, but yeah, there is just a bit of me that's like, man, I guess that's why Spencer's a teacher, because he can just do that. But I cannot in any way. I would just be like, I have to have it all written out. So it the honest answer is, you know, between 5 to 10 hours. You know, I recently tweeted about this, like a lot of that time, like at least, you know, 30 minutes to an hour is spent trying to find music. And it's not even like I'm being particularly, you know, cautious about it. It's just like, what's the free music that's not going to get YouTube to nuke me from orbit? What is like, does this fit? No. Does this no? And you know, that's why, you know, shout outs to Cassie, who recently linked me to a bunch of like, you know, not like basically you could buy licensed music to use, and it's by an author. So Cassie, thank you. That's gonna make my life a lot easier in that aspect. But yeah, it takes a long time, unfortunately. But you know, I do like a lot of it, and what I try to do is just like do a little bit every day, like between like an hour to half an hour of working on my stuff every day, and that kind of makes the load a little bit easier.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to do that all in one thing. That would be nightmarish. But I mean, you can totally tell. Anybody that has watched Aaron's videos, I'm sure, can attest to this, that they are like, you can tell that a lot of love and care goes into them. So I want to say thank you as a viewer for putting in all that work. I'm sure it feels like a lot of work, but it really shows. I just want to say that the videos are fantastic. So I hope folks do check out your videos if they haven't watched them already, because they're like I said it at the beginning, you're my favorite reviewer / enthusiast in the scene. Your videos are just an absolute delight to watch. Do you typically, like you mentioned, like you read the book and then you start writing the script. Do you pretty much do it like write, like you do reviews of things that you just read, as opposed to like going back on older stuff or anything like that?
I have a list. I have like a schedule that I try to stick to, but not super, super strictly. Like, basically I just like, okay, you know, I figure I can crank out a video one, you know, twice a month. You know, I have like, hey, here's for this month, here's two things I want to read. And you know, and whether or not that works out, maybe I'll read it and be like, I don't have an angle on this yet, or maybe this isn't for me. So then I'll move on. But like, yeah, it's basically just, you know, I have my list of things I want to cover. There's a couple gaps in my current schedule. I am foolishly leaving a lot of space for what I'm hoping will be a Spire long read. And I really want to, I don't know if you've ever read or heard of R.F. Kuang, but author of the Poppy Wars trilogy, and most recently Babel, and Arcane History. But like, I really want to make some comparisons to Kuang's Babel and Spire, you know, the City Must Fall, because they're both about, you know, big towers. So far that's all I've got. So that might take a little bit of doing, but you know, I just have a schedule. I try to, you know, knock out a couple games, and you know, follow that roughly, so that way I can get to around 20 a year. You know, and that's basically it. It's just kind of, you know, laying the train tracks as the engine rolls down. I'm sure you understand that feeling.
Yeah. I'm trying to constantly current Spencer is always cursing past Spencer for the work that he has left for him to do. So I'm sure past Aaron has also cursed you in times. I'm very excited to hear and see anything that you have to say about Spire. Spire is one of my absolute faves. I'm such a sucker for the game, the setting, the system. I think the resistance system is a very interesting system. So I'm excited to see what you cook up. And now I know that you're going to be comparing it to this book, which will be kind of cool. Then maybe I got a book now to add to my list to read, because I don't have anything on my reading list right now. I could use some new stuff.
Listen, I'm always out here yelling about R.F. Kuang. I think she does some great like military fantasy. But Babel is, I mean, actually, you're an academic, right? You've done academia. So Babel is about like it's about colonialism in a lot of ways, about the British Empire. But basically, it's like this young, you know, Chinese boy is taken to fantasy England, basically. And he learns, you know, to work at this translation institute, Babel, with a bunch of other people. And like there's a magic system that involves silver, and like how silver can, like, if you use words that are translated correctly, you know, create magical effects. But it's a really interesting book about how, like, both, you know, colonialism, you know, uses translation as a tool of empire, as well as just, like, the ways in which academia, especially Oxford, which is, you know, where Kwong, you know, studied when she was writing this book. And I think she got a, you know, either a master's, I think a master's, I think she's doing her PhD now, but, you know, thinking about how, like, academic institutions help perpetuate and, you know, maintain empire, especially, you know, Oxford, you know, with the British Empire. But, you know, it's a big old book. But there's a lot of stuff about, you know, the Luddites in there at the very end that, like, I think people will be able to latch onto. But yeah, you know, R.F. Kuang, one of my favorite authors, just, you know, across the board.
Cool. I mean, I've written the note down for myself. I absolutely wanted to check this book out, especially after that synopsis like that. It sounds really, really fascinating. Cool. Fantastic. I have a couple like questions or thoughts that I've been having about, like, the concept of game reviews and stuff like that. And I think it fits well with sort of what you had been thinking or what you had mentioned at the top of, like, you call yourself, like, an enthusiast, right?
Right.
Because every once in a while I see, like, cropped up conversations about, like, critique in RPGs and all that sort of stuff. And, like, how some people are, like, really clamoring for it and wanting it. And then, like, in other spaces, it's just, like, totally, it's not desired in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
And I'm curious, like, why do you, I guess first of all, it's just like, I don't know of many people who do, like, RPG overviews or reviews or whatever it is, like, kind of like what you're doing. And I'm wondering, like, there's so many RPGs out there, but there's not a lot of people who are necessarily shining lights on them, especially, like, smaller things. Why do you think that is the case?
Ooh. That's a tough one.
It's a real casual conversation,
you know,
about the state of critique in RPGs.
Right. You know, like, I've also unfortunately been on Twitter and been following those conversations as well. And, you know, it definitely led me to think more about the way, you know, I'm working, which in basically boiled down to, oh, I'm not a critic. I'm just talking about things that I'm more of a marketer than a critic, which is fine by me. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, firstly, volume is a disaster, right? It's just like, and I mean, not a disaster. It is a disaster for discoverability. But, like, it, you know, it's great that, you know, any rando can put a game up on itch.io and, you know, have people play it. You know, that's my first game was like a Word document, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that we have that capacity, you know. But, you know, one, it's just like, there's just a lot of people with the access and interest to in playing games now, which is great. But, you know, shining spotlights, I mean, a lot of it, I think, you know, my background is in, like, public health. So I'll think about incentives a lot. Mm. And I think that just, like, you know, there's not a lot of incentive to cover stuff that's not really big. You know, shout outs to Polygon. I love Polygon. I was a Polygon, you know, I run a Tumblr fan blog for Polygon for years. my Tumblr name is still a Polygon reference, but, like, you know, they don't cover indie games very often. And there's just no reason for them to do that because it doesn't drive traffic because, you know, the state of media is falling apart as well. And, you know, that's why it, you know, shout outs to Lynn Cadega, who is, you know, doing much more, you know, smaller game coverage. But yeah, I mean, I really just think is, like, you know, as we are all well aware, there's not enough money coming into the hobby as opposed to that's just being completely, you know, absorbed by big names. And, like, hell, I think you're a big name in tabletop RPGs. You know, I consider you to be, like, you know, one of my top 10, like, you know, big game designers. But, like, you know, right, when you compare anybody, you know, even freaking Jay Dragon, right, to the scope and scale of Dungeons and Dragons, or even Pathfinder, right, it is David and Goliath, like, you know. And that's, I don't want to, like, go on, this is a chill, fun time, I don't want to get on a tangent about how, you know, games coverage is being eaten alive by media monopolies, but, you know, that is unfortunately you know, I feel like just a huge problem with with indie tabletop games is that, you know, nobody is really being incentivized to cover tiny little games, like doing weird niche coverage, like the stuff that so many of like indie, you know, critiques are like, you know, the blogosphere, right, is still well and going strong, but like none of them folks are making money. Yeah. You know, and I'm grateful for all the work they do, but unfortunately it is a passion thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially after hearing that you put 5 to 10 hours into a video, right? Like, if you're back to that concept of incentives, then yeah, like 5 to 10 into a video, and if it's for a game that people just for one reason or another they're not going to put their eyes on, that's rough. I think the other thing that really interests me about all this is the concept of negativity when talking about other games, which is, I think a lot of us, and myself absolutely included, do not like it when people say bad things about our stuff and react pretty harshly when that happens. And I, you know, I wonder if that is because I'm not in many other like scenes, right? Like I'm in academia, and academics argue all the time, and like that's fine. Like that's almost like expected when I go to a conference, is that I get into like interesting debates on psychological theory with people, and like that's just part of the fun. But like here, when somebody is like, I don't like this thing, it's like, hey, fuck you. And I wonder about that, right? I wonder about why negativity is such like a, like, you try and avoid it at all costs. Because I think that is why we do things like call ourselves enthusiasts and stuff like that. Because like, if we did introduce negativity into the way we talk about games, it just feels like it's a way to make enemies really fast.
Right. That's a good point. No, yeah, definitely. Right. That's the thing where like, I mean, I think it was on one of the more recent, like Yes Indeed podcasts that, I'll find the name of that person in a moment, but like they were talking about how like they're you know, there are people who are into the scene for like, you know, want to improve their craft. And some people are, you know, are not, you know, into the scene to do that. It's Paul Bleakley, I believe, was on the recent, it was their May 16th episode, but like, you know, Paul was talking about how like, you know, sometimes he'll give a review and he'll have like a lot of pushback, and people will be like, hey, I didn't want you to, you know, tell me this. And, you know, he says that like, you know, he's interested in, you know, improving people's craft. And, you know, I completely understand, you know, that take, but I think that, you know, there are so many of us that are just like making for an audience of like 50 people, right? Mm-hmm. Or like 10 people. You know, like it's like, hey, this is something that like our friends are interested in. And like, I mean, I think a lot of like, and I am also the same way, right? Like if I see even a slightly mean comment on a video, that person gets nuked from orbit. Like, sorry. I'm sensitive. And like, you know, I think it's just like, none of us are, you know, none of us are getting rich off of this. It is all coming down to passion. And like when we even get somebody that's like, hey, you know, this doesn't work for me, or like, I don't like this. And also because all of this conversation is happening again on Twitter, hell site, miserable, place to exist. Right. Our instant response is like violence, you know, the red mist descends, instant bad faith reading, no matter how well intentioned the criticism is. And like, yeah, I really, you know, I think it is just like we love our stuff so much that we hate to like even the best faith criticisms are just like, you know, completely, they just really get under our skin. And like, you know, I think that is it is fair, because we are all trying so hard. And, you know, also like I've seen a little bit of stuff from like, you know, people who run Kickstarters, and you have to deal with people who are just like, why hasn't this game been fulfilled yet? And it's like, all right, yeah, you build up a skin online, you kind of instantly turtle into yourself. You're like, I cannot take this, because this is not a good faith criticism. So I feel like maybe that's where a lot of designers are at this stage, and I cannot blame anyone.
Man, Kickstarter backers are a whole other breed of, I just don't want to interact with you in any way, shape, or form, 9 times out of 10. That Superbacker logo is like the equivalent of the blue check mark, where it's like, I see it and I just know I don't want to engage with you. I have no desire to engage with you, sort of thing.
Right.
It is interesting. I think that's a really interesting point you have about, like, we're, you know, for many of us, we're just making this for a very small audience of people who are very into this very niche thing that you are, you want to make a game out of. And, and exactly like you said, if none of us are here to kind of like get rich, then I also think inevitably then, like you mentioned that individual who's, you know, they do these sorts of reviews to help people improve their craft. And I think a lot of us are not looking to improve our craft.
Right, right. You say this about balance all the time. You're just like, I don't care about balance.
Right. Like, the number of times, I just, it, maybe this is a weird thing to say, but I just don't generally care what other people think about design. I make the games that I want to make, and like,
right,
that's it, right? And if somebody else doesn't like the way the game works or anything like that, I don't think I've failed the design or that I can improve myself as a designer by listening to this person. I made the thing I wanted to make. And I think that's why if somebody's like, I don't like this, I go, well, I don't like you as a person.
Right. I think maybe, so I'm also an author. I try to get novels published. Fingers crossed that'll happen eventually. But like, you know, this is a thing that comes up a lot in writer circles, right? Which is like, hey, if you are an author, do not go on Goodreads. It's not for you. You know, if you go through, you know, if you enter into Goodreads, you know, through that way lies death, right? It is, and like, it'll get into your head and it'll ruin your writing. And like, I think there is some truth to that, which is like, many reviews, like, I are really not for the designer, right? Mm. Like, I think that like, if you are looking for feedback on your design, you have a group of people you can be like, hey, will you look this over for me? Like, I'm not feeling so sure about this, or like, I think I'm trying to achieve this effect or this feeling, but like, you are, you know, here's my small group of people I can trust with my feedback, right? These like, you know, larger reviews, you know, I don't think I'm certainly at the level yet where I would consider my reviews, you know, a mass market audience, right? But like, I think once you get to, you know, people who, you know, are consistently doing reviews, and I think the, you know, blogging folks are able to do this with more speed, cover more games. Mm. But, you know, I feel like those reviews are kind of, you know, telling people or fellow, you know, bloggers who are like pretty, you know, deep into, you know, mechanics and trying to figure out what a game is doing, you know, and whether or not they would work within their systems. I feel like there is a separate, you know, category for reviews, which is like reviews for, you know, an audience to tell you, you know, where, you know, whether or not you should buy this, versus, you know, reviews for the enthusiasts who are like, hey, this is how you can include this in your campaign, versus, you know, reviews for, you know, the designer, which are very rarely public facing. Mm-hmm. I think that those are probably, you know, if you're really, you know, that's not to say that this is universal, but I feel like, you know, if you are looking for feedback, you don't want it to be public. You want it to be in a place where you can lick your wounds, which is certainly the case for every novel draft that I've had.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I have that small group of people who I trust to give early docs of things, and know that when they come back and say, hey, Spencer, this doesn't work, or, you know, this isn't working the way that you think it is, or anything like that, I trust these individuals, right? I trust them, and I know that they're there to help me improve my craft, and I want them to help me improve my craft. And I think that's the thing, is like, it's a matter of trust, right? Like, reviewers that I don't know, I have no inherent trust with them. And so there's that aspect to it, where it's like, I don't know you and you don't know me, so do you know my game?
Right.
And you get into that whole thing. Now, shout out to Will Yopes. Yeah, absolutely. Like, Will is one of those people I would give any of my docs to, and I know that they're going to come back and tell me what's working, what's not. This is why Will is the only person I work with as my editor. They are incredible as an editor. Can't recommend Will Yopes enough. If you're listening to this, you need an editor for something, go hire Will. I love, Will is a delightful human being as well, which always helps in the process. Aaron, I didn't know that you were like an author writer and working on that sort of stuff. What kind of, I mean, do you, can you share a little bit about sort of the stuff that you're working on?
Yeah. I mean, I started writing, largely as a result of graduating undergrad, and realizing that once you don't have a GPA, you have to like figure out meaning in your life through other ways. So that's kind of why I started writing. And I've been doing that since about 2018, 2017. Technically, my first writing was like a Monster Factory fan fiction, which you can find somewhere in the depths of AO3 if you really want to see that. But I've been trying to write for, a long time, or not a long time, for a couple years now at this point. I have an agent, and we are trying to, sell my books to various degrees of success. A lot of them are, like military fantasy-esque. Like I had one which is like, what if the British Empire was colonized by the Marathi Confederation instead, with basically like big animal mechs and like trying to satirize, like a lot of the weird imperial, novels and storytelling that came out of that era, which is, one of my favorite things. Probably never going to get published, but very proud of that book.
That
Currently
sounds
work.
awesome.
Yeah, listen, it kicks ass. I'm thrilled about it. I'm glad I'm my favorite thing I've ever written. Sony or, Netflix or whatever, get at me.
Yeah,
But
there
like,
you go.
right now I'm working on a book that's like, what if, it's basically like, what if the Catholic Church had kaiju and people were mad at them because of that and tried to,
What
do you, yeah, what if they were mad about that? And it tries to draw on like a lot of the stuff that the United States did in like the 50s, 60s, and 70s with all the coups that we did,
if?
and tried to get revenge for those. It's it's an interesting book. The first draft was very bad. My agent gave me a lot of great advice. I'm currently revising it. Fingers crossed that come, hitting movie theaters in 2029 if I'm super, super lucky. But like, yeah, that's the kind of stuff I like to write. And that's why I was so excited when you started doing your own like short fiction. I was like, oh yeah, Spencer's starting to do more story-driven stuff. But yeah, that's the writer stuff I like to do.
I haven't been to a theater in years, in years and years and years. And even pre-pandemic, I wasn't going to the theater. I just don't like the movie
Right,
theater
it's hard.
personally. But that movie will make me go to the movie theater. If that movie exists,
Yeah, listen.
I'm going opening night to go see that. That sounds
Yeah.
incredible. Yeah, I've been trying to do a little right. I love lore. I love that shit. Just put it right into my
Yeah.
veins, right? Like,
Yeah, listen, RPGs and lore are sticky, but like it is cool.
right? Like, there, like, I go, I waffle back and forth so much on like, I want virtually nothing canonical in a book, or even when I'm making a book, I don't want there to be really much lore in it at all, so that people can make it however they want. And then
Right.
there's the part of me that's like, but I also want to do the entire world building thing and tell you about all the worlds and factions that are inside my head that are also part of this thing. And how do I make you interested in this to even a fraction of how interesting it sounds inside my own head? So I've been kind of thinking about the whole writing thing, and I think rather than trying to put a lot of it into the games, or things related to the games, I think writing some sort of novel or short stories, or what I never know the correct term, because I know there's like novel, novella, short story, it all depends on like the word count or whatever. But anyway, writing fiction of various scales, I think will be the thing that just like gets that demon out of me, so that it's not scratching the inside of my skull all the time about like, but what about that whole Nova world that you've got inside your head? The people must hear about it. How do you get yourself to write, Aaron? How do you do it? Because I can
Oh.
barely get myself to design games, and that's ostensibly what I'm supposed to do. Trying to write anything that's not a game? How?
Yeah.
How?
Well, mostly what I do is I complain to my wife and I say, my love, I have not written today. And she's like, well, you should probably write, huh? like, yeah, I probably should. And it's just like the adage for writers is, you know, write every day. And right. it's just, there's no easy way, unfortunately, for me. Like, it is just like, hey, I'm going to put Forrest on my phone so I can't go on Twitter. I'm going to say, here's the hour that I'm going to sit in front of my computer and write until I hit 500 words. And then once I have hit 500 words, maybe I'll be able to go over, but like, I usually don't. I usually write my books 500 words at a time, which means I write super slow. Mm. But like, you know, if you do that every day, you know, for 200 days, you get a 100,000 word book. And like, it is just like, unfortunately, it's discipline and it sucks. You know, I like to, you know, like sometimes authors will talk about how like stories just like kind of spring forth and like characters do things on their own. And for me, it's just not that at all. There's mm-hmm. nothing magical about my writing process. It's just like, all right, here we go again. And I have to pull my fingernails until the words come out. But like, that's unfortunately it.
Yeah, I agree with Dylan in chat, where it's boo on discipline. If discipline is the secret ingredient to this, then this is a nightmare for me. This is the worst thing that you could have told me.
It's terrible. I agree, Dylan.
I have such terrible discipline in every possible interpretation of that word and manifestation of it in my life. And like, I've been trying to add a bunch of daily tasks to my life to improve myself as a human being and everything. And so adding writing to that, like a dedicated block of writing to that, feels right. like a monumental task. But you're right, right? Like, that's how you get better at anything, is you do the thing, right? You actually you're not gonna just be magically good. I'm not magically good at it. So I have to just like write. So I guess
I don't feel good. I don't feel good saying it. Like, it makes me feel bad too. Like, I hate doing it. But like, I like having done it is the most important thing. It's like at the end, it's like, all right, that I feel good about having done something today.
That is true. There is that sense of satisfaction from checking a box, completing a task, that little bit of brain drugs that you mm-hmm. get that goes, good job, mm-hmm. you did the thing. You mentioned 100,000 words, which to me sounds like a billion words. I mean, so are you typically writing like longer novels like that?
Yeah, it just kind of depends. Like, I aim for 100K because I feel like that's the standard of where I, you know, where the books my genre are in are at. And you know, like, I aimed for 100K for my last one, and my agent's like, this needs to be 30,000 words shorter. And I was like, you're not wrong. So like, it really just depends. I think it comes down to just like, you know, what the project you're working for is and what the scope you are is. But like, yeah, it is just, I'm still so new at this. Like, this is only like my second like full novel that I've ever written. Right. So like, you know, it really depends, but yeah, that's where I aim for. But right now I'm aiming for the 65-70K range. Gotcha. But like my first thing was I want to say like a 28,000 word novella, something that I just like wrote over the summer. And like that is much more manageable. If anybody who's listening is like interested in creative writing, like, you know, start small, I would say. You know, that doesn't mean that short stories are easier. In fact, short stories are really, really hard, but way, way harder than novels, IMO. But like, yeah, that's where I'm at this point is around 100.
Yeah. See, I think this scope and scale thing is the thing that also is going to be tricky for me, because I when I write games, I'm very bad at focusing on one game at a time. I mm-hmm. know that I should just be like, this is the thing I'm working on, and then give it my attention and like actually do the thing. But instead I work on five or six different things at once. And so none right. of them are making any kind of real progress at a given time until I decide to become hyper focused on one and actually get it across the finish line. And like, so then like the idea of writing a novel, like a long novel, feels terrifying to me, because I know I'm going to get X amount of time in and go, But now I want to tell this story, which is completely unrelated to this, and that's going to be, that'll be another thing that's going to be tricky. So maybe, maybe starting at that smaller scope that, that allows me to maybe hop around will be a better plan.
Yeah. I guess it really just depends on how willing you are to revise, right? Like if you are telling a story and halfway through, you're like, actually, I want to tell this other story instead. This one's way more interesting. You know, like I know plenty of people who are like, okay, this book is a new book now. And just like kind of have to go back through and try it. But like, yeah, plenty of people write in all sorts of different ways. The most important, you know, the method that works best is the one that you do. So like, yeah, like for me, it's got to be outlined. I can't do anything without an outline. But like, you know, whatever works best for you is really the best way to do it.
Yeah, the outline thing is the other interesting thing. You know, you mentioned the idea of like some people where the characters just kind of manifest and they're doing things, and then you've got your like outline plan. And as I've alluded to, I plan nothing. I plan nothing when I do things, especially videos and streams and anything like that. So I feel like that'll be another struggle point for me, is trying to think about like, how do I outline a concept of a story? I feel like what I want to do is just start writing and then see what happens. But I feel like that's also going to make a bad book.
I mean, I don't know. Like, so many of my colleagues are people who you know, don't use outlines and just write the story that moves them. Mm. And like, I really think that like, you know, there isn't really like a good or bad way to do it. Like, I think that if you're like, okay, this is something that's interesting to me, you know, let me chase this for as long as it feels interesting.
Yeah.
And like, even if you don't have something that's 100% complete by the time that your attention, you know, swerves, then that's okay, right? Then you're just, you know, you still have it. You still have the work, like the, you know, no words are wasted, even if nobody ever reads them. Like, it's still just kind of building your own personal skill and story. And like, that's kind of nice, I think.
You know what? I had not thought about it that way, but that's actually totally true. I never thought about it that way when it comes to writing stories, but I do think about it that way when it comes to writing games. I have and we all have this, the folders of shame in our Google Drive or whatever, that are of the ideas that you had, and that you might have even put a shit ton of time and design effort into it, and then eventually it just doesn't manifest for X number of reasons. And I have never thought of any of that as wasted time. I've never thought of that as like, oh, I can't believe I wasted all that time and energy putting into that project and I didn't finish it. It is valuable no matter what to like it, whatever I learned from that experience of writing that doc is somewhere rattling around in my head and is helping shape my future writing. So you've helped give me some good perspective on this whole writing thing. I appreciate that.
I'm glad it's good that is the case, because I think that, you know, I'm constantly checking in on your lab stuff and, you know, just seeing the ideas that you've got bouncing around, because, you know, you got a lot of them.
too many. It's it haunts me. I last night, I don't let myself stop even when I try and sleep. And so like, I'm laying in bed last night trying to go to sleep, and the dog is not helping because she steals my pillow all the time. The dog sleeps in the bed with me because, of course, everybody who knows that Clover is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
Right.
Besides my wife. But Clover is amazing, but she steals my pillow constantly, so I don't go to sleep right away anyway. So I'm sitting there thinking about games, and I remember having some, like, this always happens. You have those night ideas that feel like they're brilliant and, like, earth-shattering. And either you write it down or you don't. And if you don't, you're probably going to forget it in the morning. Even if you do write it down, you look at it and you go, well, why did I think this was so clever? that was me last night. Past Spencer, sleepy Spencer, thought he had really figured out this one thing that had been a sticking point for one of my games. And I even wrote out the note. And then I looked at it this morning. I was like, I think Spencer was just sleepy. I think he was sleepy and he thought this was a really good idea, as he finally drifted off into unconsciousness.
Chocolate 2, the secret to chocolate.
What?
I guess. This sure could be a game.
All right, we're moving with it. Yeah, interesting. Cool. Well, I'm gonna definitely try some of the... I mean, I'm definitely going to keep trying to plug away some of this writing stuff just to just because I think it's fun. And what better reason do you have than that? I think another thing that's interesting to me about, one thing that is interesting to me or appeals to me about writing this story stuff is a lot of my friends and family don't play role-playing games, mm-hmm. but they're aware that I make these things. And they're like, they're aware to some degree, varying degrees about what the games are even about. But like every once in a while, they want to know more about what it's about without knowing anything about mechanics, right? But just like, what is the story that's going on in this? And I feel like this is also a way of like helping bridge that gap between some of the important people in my life who like probably won't ever engage with the game side of it, but could engage with like this weird concept of a story that I have in my head, or the kind of stories that I think you could tell with these games. And I feel like that is a helpful way of translating that for them.
Right Like that's the thing that Warhammer did right, you know. Like it is so much easier to get somebody to be like, all right, I'll get the stupid ruler out and I'll read your stupid books, because I read the Horus Heresy, mm-hmm. and there was like a really cool battle scene or whatever. And like, it is so much easier. Like, I do not have the desire to play a Warhammer tabletop game at all, but like, I want to play with the minis. Cause like I've, you know, read some of the books and like, you know, listen to the lore videos. And like, that's, I think you're completely right. Like, I think we need more tabletop novels. Yeah. that would be awesome, I think.
Let me give you a piece of advice. Don't get into Warhammer. Logan Dean has hooked me back into Kill Team, and I curse him for that, for having
I need to make rent.
Yeah, don't do it. The number of unpainted minis that are just within arm's reach of this table right here is nightmarish, and you had talked to me 6 months ago, and there were none of them. And then Logan is like, but look at this thing that I made when I was supposed to be playing Netrunner with him. And then it's like, okay, I guess I'm doing this now.
I remember you tweeting like, hey, what if I was getting into minis, what should I buy? And I was like, oh no, don't. I was like, Spencer, please don't throw your life away.
Why have you done this to yourself? I was one of those. I played a shit ton of 40K. Back a long time ago, when I was in high school and early college, and then I got out. I did the right thing and got out, and then years later, now Logan has dragged me back in. I'm gonna blame Logan. It's my own fault. It's exactly the thing that you just described, where I listened to some audiobooks of like Warhammer novels, and I was like, fuck, I kind of do want to be in the be in this world a little bit more now, and I just use Logan as an excuse.
Like, listen, the concept of the Space Marines is very silly. It's just like, yeah, what if the Emperor cloned himself 20 times and all his cool clone sons were genetically modified Ubermen? And like, well, that's, I don't love that. But also they have cathedral spaceships.
Yeah, why not? And chain swords. Why not? Okay, sure, that makes sense. 40,000 years in the future.
Yeah, why not? Time travel is done by like the Emperor's like will, because he's like dead, but also he's alive. Okay, sure. Like,
it's real wacky.
It rules.
I agree. I agree with the concept that there should be more TTRPG novels. And now I feel like you have helped inspire me to want to go do more of this, which is fantastic. I appreciate you telling me that. I don't appreciate you telling me that discipline is the secret ingredient.
Yeah, sorry.
But I also appreciate it at the same time, because it is the honest answer about how this is going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, listen, like, you know, an easy kind of way to bridge that gap is like a system neutral setting. I mean, if you, you know, Thousand Islands by ZXU, you know, Josh Hitty, which is Into the Riverlands. You know, those are some of my favorite system neutral settings, and that's kind of like you could work your way in there somehow, you know, and kind of bridge that gap and be like, yeah, this isn't a novel. It's just, you know, it's a story with like a D6 table in there every once now and then.
I was actually just talking with Josh yesterday about sort of that sort of thing. Like, I moved it somewhere so that I would read it, Into the Cessan Citadel, is one of those like setting books that I just want to consume again, just because I think setting books are really fascinating. And so, yeah, maybe that's the happy median is like, okay, writing a full novel, maybe we can't convince every RPG designer to do that, but maybe you could write a somewhat rules agnostic setting book for your to go along with your game. I like that. It you know, it harkens back to the days of like when you would buy a video game and it came with a big thick manual inside.
Yeah,
like I can't wait to read this manual even before I read or even play the game. And like I want that experience with my RPGs where like I can't wait to read this thing that has really not gonna inform much of the mechanics of the game, but mm-hmm. I just want to read it because I want to consume this thing.
I mean, that's kind of like how people say that reading books is play, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's kind of the same space, which is like imagining what could happen, right? That is like, ideally, like, that's my favorite part of RPGs is like, you know, making shit up with your friends and being like, oh, but what if this happened? That would be so interesting and fun. And, you know, that's great, I think.
I think that is great. I think this is a great thing to put out into the world, which is write more novels, write more stories, and write more setting books, because that stuff is the best. Cassie, I agree. Pretending by yourself is also the best. Doing a little solo right. make-believe is just delightful.
100%.
I love that stuff. Well, Aaron, this has been just really great talking about the concepts of review, but also all this writing stuff has been super I don't know. It's been inspiring to me. I feel so energized to go do this. Now, here's the question, Aaron, as we wrap up here and mm-hmm. I turn off this camera. When I go downstairs, what am I going to do? Will I actually sit down and do some writing, or will I inevitably get pulled into video games? Because there's Zelda, Aaron.
I was going to say, Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom is really making it hard to write.
And how am I supposed to do that?
I would say, I think you have until you beat Tears of the Kingdom, and then maybe you should, you know, sit down and work on something. But that's what I've been telling myself. It's okay. Like, I could do another 100 shrines.
Excellent. All right. Well, if I've got your permission, then excellent. We're good. I'm going to not go right after this. I'm going to go play some Zelda. Aaron said it's okay. You all have permission to go play Zelda instead of doing any of your work. thank you very much for giving us that, Aaron.
You're welcome.
This has been a delight. I've truly enjoyed this. Would you mind letting folks know where they can find you, especially all your cool videos and everything like that?
Yeah, that's youtube.com/AAVoit, I think, is my YouTube URL. Let me see if that's your channel. It's at AAVoit on YouTube. Do one of those. I don't know what YouTube made some changes. But yeah, that's at AAVoit on YouTube. It's also at AaronSXL on Twitter. Just click around. Eventually, you'll find some of my junk. That's mainly where you can find all my RPG stuff.
Excellent, fantastic. Yeah, and for folks who listen to this or watch this later on, all the links to that will be in the descriptions of wherever it is that you are consuming this conversation. So do make sure that you check out Aaron's stuff. It's fantastic. Like I said, the reviews, you can tell there's so much love and care that goes into them. And so please do make sure that you're checking out the very excellent work that Aaron is putting out there. So that wraps it up. That wraps up Coffee Break for this week. Thank you so much to Aaron and to everybody who has been either watching along or listening along. It's great to have you all. We'll be back next week. I don't plan anything, remember? So don't know who I'm talking to next week, but I'll figure it out. So we'll be back next week for more conversations about whatever it is that we're interested in. Have yourselves a wonderful rest of the day, morning, afternoon, evening, wherever it is you are. We'll catch you later. Bye.